Elevator 1, my name is Elijah Davis, Mr. Apostolic Secretary of Congregation. I was out to throw down in Elgin, Texas. Today is May the 7th, 2025, or is the 11th day of Zip, 2029. We were started our first service today. And the song with a prayer name will go right on into patriarchs and prophets. We're going to continue on Abraham and Canaan. This is going to be part two of that subject. And we're on chapter 12. It says, okay, part two of Abraham and Canaan. We're on chapter 12 of Patriarchs and Prophets. We're on the first paragraph on page 141. For the Abraham's household comprised more than 1,000 souls, those who were led by his teaching. All right. It says to worship. Let's do that again. For the Abraham's household comprised more than of 1,000 souls, those who were led by his teaching for the worshiping of the one true Yahweh, found a home in his encampment. And here, as in a school, they received such instruction as would prepare them to be representatives of the true faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant. Thus, a great responsibility rested upon him, for he was training heads of the families, and his methods of the government would be carried out in the households over which they should preside. In the early time, the father was the ruler and priest of his own family, and he exercised authority over his children even after they had families of their own. His descendants were taught to look up unto him as their head in both religious and secular matters. This patriarchal system of the government Abraham endeavored to perpetuate as it tended to preserve the knowledge of the Yahweh. It was necessary to bind the numbers of the household together in the order for the building up of a barrier against the idolatry that had become so widespread and so deep-seated. For the Abraham sought by the every means in his power for the guardian of the inmates of his encampment against mingling with the heathen and witnessing their idolatrous practices, for he knew that the familiarity with the evil would insensibly corrupt the principles. For the greatest terror was exercised to shut out every form of false religion and for the impressing of the mind with the majesty and glory of the living Yahweh as the true object of the worship. For it was a wise arrangement which Yahweh himself had made for the casting off of his people so far as possible from the connection with the heathen, making them a people dwelling alone and not reckoned among the nations. He has separated Abraham from his idolatrous kindred, that the patriarch might train and educate his family apart from the seductive influences which would have surrounded them in the Mesopotamia, and that the true faith might be preserved in its purity by his descendants from generation to generation. For the Abraham's affection for his children and his household led him for the guardian of the religious faith, for the imparting unto them of a knowledge of the divine statutes as the most precious legacy he could transmit unto them and through them unto the world. All were taught that they were under and with the rule of the Yahweh of the heavens. For there was to be no oppression on the part of the parents, and no disobedience on the part of the children. For Yahweh's law had appointed to each his duty, and only in the obedience unto it could any secure happiness or prosperity. For his own example, the solid influence of his daily life was a constant lesson for the unswerving integrity, the benevolence, and the unselfish courtesy which had won the admiration of the kings were displayed in the home. There was a fragrance about the life and a nobility and the loveliness of the character. Let's read that again. For there was a fragrance about the life, a nobility and a loveliness of the character that revealed unto all that he was connected with heaven. He did not neglect the soul of the honored servant. In his household there was not one law for the master and another for the servant, a royal way for the rich and another for the poor. All were treated with the justice and compassion and inheritors as the inheritors with him of the grace of the life, for he will command his household. There would be no sinful neglect to restrain the evil prosperity or the propensities of his children, and no weak and unwise indulgent favoritism, no yielding of his conviction of the duty for the claims of the mistaken affection. For the Abraham would not only give right instruction, but he would maintain the authority of the just and righteous law. How few there are in our days who follow this example. On the part of too many parents, there is a blind and selfish sentimentalism, miscalled love, which tested, and the leaving children with their uniform judgment and undisciplined passion for the control of their own will. This is a verest cruelty for the youth, and a great wrong for the world. For the parental indulgence causes disorder in the familiars, in the family, and in the society, where it confirms in the young the desire for the following of the inclination instead of the submitting unto the divine requirement. Thus they grow up with their heart adverse for the doing of the Yahweh's will, and they transmit their irreligious insubordinate spirit unto their children and their children's children, like the Abraham. Parents should command their household after them. Let the disobedience to the parental authority be taught. Let's do it again. Let the disobedience for the parental authority be taught and enforced as the first step in the obedience unto the authority of the Yahweh. For the light esteem in which the law of the Yahweh is held, even by the religious leaders, has been productive of the great evil. For the teaching, which has become so widespread that the divine statutes are no longer binding upon men, is the same as the idolatry and its effect upon the morals of the people. Those who seek for the lessening of the claims of the Yahweh's holy law are with the striking directly at the foundation of the very government of the families and nations. For the religious parents, with the failing to walk in his statutes, do not command their household for the keeping of the way of the Yahweh. For the law of the Yahweh is not made as a rule of life for the children, as they make homes of their own, feed with no obligation for the teacher. Feel no obligation. Let's read that again. For the law of the Yahweh is not made for the ruling of the life of the children, as they make homes of their own, they feel under no obligation for the teaching of their children, but they themselves have never been taught. And this is why there are so many godless families. This is why depravity is so deep and widespread. Not until their parents themselves walk in the law of the Yahweh with a perfect heart will they be prepared to command their children after them. For a reformation in this respect is needed, with a reformation that shall be deep and broad. For the parents need to reform ministry. For the parents need to reform. For the ministers need to reform. For they need the Yahweh in their households. If they would see a different state of the things, they must bring of his word and to their families, and must make it their counselor. For they must teach their children that it is the voice of the Yahweh addressed unto them, and is to be implicitly obeyed. For they should patiently instruct their children kindly and untiringly, teach them how to live in the order to please Yahweh. For the children of such a household are prepared for the meeting of the sophistries of the infidelity. They have accepted the Bible as a basis of their faith, and they have a foundation that cannot be swept away by the incoming tide of the skepticism. In too many households, prayer is neglected. Parents feel that they have no time for the morning and the evening worship, for they cannot spare a few moments to be spent in a thanksgiving unto the Yahweh for his abundant mercy, for the blessed sunshine and the showers of the rain that cause the vegetation to flourish, and for the guardianship of the holy angels. For they have no time to offer prayer for the divine help and guidance, and for the abiding presence of the Asher in the home and the household. For they go forth to labor as the ox or the horse goes without one thought of the Yahweh or heaven. They waver. They have souls so precious that rather than commit them to be hopelessly lost, that's it. Okay. The son of the Yahweh gave his life for the ransom of them. Really, they have little more appreciation of his great goodness than have the beasts that perish. Like the patriarchs of old, those who profess to love the Yahweh should erect an altar to the Yahweh wherever they pitch their tent. Wherever there was a time when every house should be a house of the prayer, it is now. Fathers and mothers should often lift up their hearts unto Yahweh in the humble supplication for themselves and their children. Let the father, as a priest of the household, lay upon the altar of Yahweh the morning and evening sacrifice, while the wife and children unite in the prayer and praise in such a household, Yahshua will love the church. From every Christian home, a holy light should shine forth. Love should be revealed in the action. It should flow out in all the homes. Intercourse showing itself intercourse showing itself in the thoughtful kindness and a gentle, unselfish courtesy, there are homes where this principle is carried out, homes where the Yahweh is worshipped, and truest love reigns. From these homes, morning and evening prayer ascends to Yahweh as sweet incense, and His mercies and blessings descend upon the supplicant or the suppliant like the morning dew. For a well-ordered Christian household is a powerful argument in the favor of the reality of the Christian religion, with an argument that the infidel cannot gainsay. All can see that there is an influence at work in the family that affects the children, and that the Yahweh of the Abraham is with them. That the home of the professed Christian had a right religion mold, they would exert a mighty influence for the good, for they would indeed be the light of the world. For the Yahweh of the heavens speaks unto every faithful parent in their words addressed unto Abraham. I know him, that he will command his household, or his children, and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Yahshua to do justice and judgment, that the Yahshua may bring upon the Abraham that which he has spoken of him. End of chapter 12. Now we're going to look at chapter 13. It says the test of the faith. I always add the blood when I use that, see that word faith. The test of the faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. That's what I'm going to name this subtitle for this subject. All right, let's go with chapter 13, the test of faith. For the Abraham had accepted without the question the promise of a son, but he did not wait for the Yahweh to fulfill his word in his own time and way, for delay was permitted for the testing of his faith and the power of the Yahweh. But he failed to endure the trial, thinking it impossible that a child should be given her in her old age. Sarah suggested as a plan by the which the divine purpose might be fulfilled, that one of her handmaidens should be taken by the Abraham as a secondary wife. For the polygamy had become so widespread that it had ceased to be regarded as a sin, but it was no less a violation of the law of the Yahweh, and it was fatal to the sacredness and peace of the family. Violation for the Abraham's marriage with the Hagar resulted in the evil not only unto his own household, but unto the future generation. Battered with the honor of her new position as Abraham's wife, and hoping to be the mother of the great nation to descend from him, Hagar became proud and boastful, and treated her mistress quickly comes in. For the mutual jealousy disturbs the peace of the once happy home. Forced to listen to the complaints of both Abraham's vanity and endeavor to restore harmony. Though it was at Sarah's earnest entreaty that he had married Hagar, she now reproached him as the one at fault. She desired to banish her rival, but Abraham refused to permit of this, for the Hagar was to be the mother of his child, as he fondly hoped, the son of the promise, as she was Sarah's servant, however, and he still left her to the control of her mistress. Hagar's haughty spirit would not brook the harshness of which her insolence had provoked. When the Sarah dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. She made her way to the desert, and as she rested beside a fountain, lonely and friendless, an angel of the Yahweh in the human form appeared unto her, addressing her as the Hagar Sarah's maid. She reminded her of her position and her duty. He bade her return unto thy mistress and submit thyself under her hand. Yet with the reproof, there were mingled words of the comfort, for the Yahweh hath heard thy affliction. I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for a multitude. And as a perpetual reminder of his mercy, she was bidden to call her child Ishmael. Yahweh shall hear. When Abraham was nearly 100 years old, the promise of a son was repeated unto him with the assurance that the future heir should be the child of the Sarah. But Abraham did not yet understand the promise. His mind at once turned unto Abraham, clinging to the belief that through him Yahweh's gracious purpose were to be accomplished. In his affection for his son, he exclaimed, "Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee." Again, the promise was given in the words that could not be mistaken, "For that Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him." Yet Yahweh was not unmindful of the father's prayer. "As for the Ishmael," he said, "I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and I will make him a great nation." For the birth of the Isaac, bringing after a lifelong waiting for the fulfillment of the desired hope, filled the tents of Abraham and Sarah with the gladness. that under Hagar, this event was the overthrow of her fondest, cherished ambition. For the Ishmael now as a youth had been regarded by all in the encampment as the heir of the Abraham's wealth and the inheritor of the blessings promised to his descendants. Now he was suddenly set aside, and in their disappointment, mother and son hated the child of Sarah. For the general rejoicing increased their jealousy, until Ishmael dared openly to mock the heir of Yahweh's promise. Sarah saw in Ishmael's turbulent disposition a perpetual source of discord, and she appealed unto Abraham, urging that Hagar and Ishmael be sent away from the encampment. The patriarch was thrown into great distress. How could he banish Ishmael, his son, still dearly beloved? In his perplexity, he pleaded for the divine guidance. Yahweh, through the holy angel, directed him to grant Sarah's desire. His love for the Ishmael or Hagar ought not to stand in their way, for only thus could he restore harmony and happiness unto his family. And the angel gave him the consoling promise that though separated from his father's house, Ishmael should not be forsaken by the Yahweh, for his life would be preserved, and he should become the father of a great nation. Abraham obeyed the angel's word, but it was not without the king's suffering, for the father's heart was heavy with the unspoken grief as he sent away Hagar and his son, and her son. And her son. For the instruction given unto Abraham touching the sacredness of the marriage relation was to be a lesson for all ages, for it declared that the rights and happiness of this relation are to be carefully guarded, even at a great sacrifice. Sarah was as the only true wife of Abraham, for her rights as a wife and mother, no other person was entitled to share. She reverenced her husband, and in this she is presented in the New Testament as a worthy example. But she was unwilling that Abraham's affections should be given unto another, and the Yahweh did not reprove her for requiring the banishment of her rival. Both Abraham and Sarah distrusted the power of Yahweh, and it was this error that led to the marriage with Hagar. For Yahweh had called Abraham to be the father of the faithful, and his life was to stand as an example of the faith unto the succeeding generations. But his faith had not been perfect, for he had shown distrust of the Yahweh and the concealing of the fact that Sarah was his wife, and again in his marriage with Hagar. that he might reach the highest standard, Yahweh subjected him to another test, the closest which man was ever called to endure. In a vision of the night, he was directed to repair to the land of the Moriah and there offer up his son as a burnt offering upon a mountain that should be shown him. At the time of the receiving of this command, Abraham had reached the age of 120 years. He was regarded as an old man, even in his generation. In his earlier years, he had been strong to endure the hardship and to brave danger, but now the ardor of his youth had passed away. One in the vigor of the manhood may with courage meet difficulties and afflictions that would cause his heart to fail later in life when his feet are falling towards the grave. But the Yahweh had reserved his last most trying test for the Abraham until the burden of the years were heavy upon him and he longed for the rest from anxiety and toil. For the patriarch was dwelling at Beersheba, surrounded by the prosperity and honor. He was very rich and was honored as a mighty prince by the rulers of the land. Thousands of sheep and cattle covered the plain that spread out beyond his encampment. On every side were the tents of his retainers, the home of the hundreds of the faithful servants. The son of Thomas had grown up to manhood by his side. Heaven seemed to have crowned with its blessing a life of his sacrifice and the patient endurance of the hope deferred. In the obedience of the faith, Abraham had forsaken his native country, had turned away from the graves of his father, and the home of his kindred. He had wandered as a stranger in the land of his inheritance. He had waited long for the birth of the promised heir. At the command of Yahweh, he had sent away his son, Ishmael. And now, when the child so long desired was entering upon the manhood, and the patriarch seemed able to discern the fruition of his hopes, a trial greater than all others was before him. But the command was expressed in the word that must have rung with the anguish that father's heart. Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and offer him for a burnt offering. Isaac was the light of his home, the solace of his old age, above all else, the inheritor of the promised blessing. For the loss of such a son by the accident or disease would have been heart-rending to the fond father. It would have bowed down his withered head, with his whited head, or it would have bowed down his whited head with the grief that he was commanded to shed the blood of that son with his own hand. It seemed to him a fearful impossibility. Satan was at hand to suggest that he must be deceived, for the divine law commands, "Thou shalt not kill," and Yahweh would not require what he had once forbidden. Going outside his tent, Abraham looked up into the calm brightness of the unclouded heaven and recalled the promise made nearly 50 years before that his seed should be immutable as the stars. If this promise was to be fulfilled through the Isaac, how could he be put to death? Abraham was tempted to believe that he might be under a delusion. In his doubt and anguish, he bowed upon the earth and prayed as he had never prayed before for some confirmation of the command that he must perform this terrible duty. He remembered the angel sent to reveal unto him Yahweh's purpose to destroy Sodom, and who bore to him the promise of this same son Isaac. And he went to the place where he had several times met the heavenly messengers, hoping to meet them again and receive some further direction. But none came unto his relief. Darkness seemed to shut him in. But the command of Yahweh was sounding in his ears, "Take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest," that command must be obeyed, and he dared not delay. For the day was approaching, and he must be on his journey. Returning to his tent, he went to the place where Isaac lay, sleeping the deep, untroubled sleep of youth and innocence. For a moment, the father looked upon the dear face of his son, then turned timidly away. He went to the side of Sarah, who was also sleeping. Should he awaken her, she might once more embrace her child? Should he tell her of the Yahweh's requirement? He longed to unburden his heart to her and share with her this terrible responsibility. But he was restrained by the fear that she might hinder him. Isaac was her joy and pride. Her life was bound up in him, and the mother's love might refuse the sacrifice. For Abraham at last summoned his son, telling him of they come in to offer sacrifice upon a distant mountain. Isaac had often gone with his father to worship as someone of the various altars that marked his wandering. And this summons excited no surprise, for the preparations for the journey were quickly completed. The wood was made ready and put upon the ass, and with two men servants, they set forth. Side by side, the father and the son journeyed in solid, for the patriarch, pondering his heavy secret, had no heart for the words. His thoughts were of the proud and fond mother, and the day when he should return unto her alone. Well, he knew that the knife would pierce her heart when it struck this the life of her son. That day, the longest that Abraham had ever experienced, dragged slowly to his throat, while his son and the young man were sleeping, he spent the night in prayer, still hoping that some heavenly messenger might come to say that the trial was enough, that the youth might return unharmed to his mother. But no relief came to his tortured soul. Another long day, another night of humiliation and prayer, while ever the command that was to leave him childless was ringing in his ears. Satan was never to whisper doubts and unbelief, for the Satan was near to whisper doubts and unbelief. Brother Abraham resisted his suggestion as they were about to begin the journey of the third day. The patriarch, looking northward, saw the promised site, the promised sign, a cloud of glory hovering over the Mount Moriah. And he knew that the voice which had spoken to him was from heaven. Even now he did not murmur against Yahweh, but strengthened his soul by the dwelling upon the evidences of the Yahweh's goodness and faithfulness. This son had been unexpectedly given, and had not he who bestowed the precious gift a right to recall his own, then faith repeated the promise, and the Isaac shall thy seed be called, and number a seed and numberless as the grains of the sand upon the shore. Isaac was a child of a miracle, and could not the power that gave him life restore it, looking beyond that which was seen. Abraham grasped the divine word, accounting that Yahweh was able to raise him up even from the dead. Yet none but the Yahweh could understand how great was the Father's sacrifice in the yielding up of his Son to death. For the Abraham desired that none but the Yahweh should witness the parting scene. He bade his servants remain behind, saying, I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. For the word was laid upon the Isaac, for the word was laid upon the Isaac as the one to be offered. For the father took the knife and the fire, and together they ascended toward the mountain. Submit the young man silently, wondering whence so far from the foes and flocks the offering was to come. At last he spoke, My father, behold the fire and the wood, but where is a lamb for a burnt offering? Oh, what a test was this! How the endearing words, My father, pierced Abraham's heart. Not yet, he could not tell him now. My son, he said, Yahweh will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. At the appointed place, he built the altar and laid the wood upon it. And with the trembling voice, Abraham unfolded to his son the divine message. It was with the terror and amazement that Isaac learned his faith, but he offered no resistance. He could have escaped his doom had he chosen to do so. The grief-stricken old man, exhausted with the struggle of those three terrible days, could not have opposed the will of the vigorous youth. So Isaac had been trained from his childhood to ready, trusting obedience. And as the purpose of the Yahweh was open before him, he yielded a willing submission. He was a sharer in Abraham's faith, and he felt that he was honored in being called to give his life as an offering to Yahweh. He tenderly seeks to lighten his father's grief and encourage his nerveless hands for the finding of the cords that confined him to the altar. And now the last words of the love are spoken. The last tears are shed. The last embrace is given. The father lifts a knife to slay his son, when suddenly his arm is stayed. An angel of the Yahweh calls to the patriarch out of heaven, Abraham, Abraham. He quickly answers, Here am I. And again the voice is heard, Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest Yahweh, since thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. Then Abraham saw a ram caught in a thicket, and quickly bringing the new victim, he offered it in the stead of his son. It is joy and gratitude. Abraham gave a new name to the sacred spot, Yahweh Jireh, for the Yahweh will provide. On Mount Moriah, Yahweh again renewed his covenant, confirming with his solemn oath the blessing unto Abraham and unto his seed. Through all coming generations, by myself have I sworn, saith to Yahweh, for because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemy, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. Abraham's great act of the faith stands like a pillar of light, illuminating the pathway of the Yahweh's servants in all succeeding ages. Abraham did not seek to excuse himself from doing the will of the Yahweh. During that 3 days' journey, he had sufficient time to reason and to doubt Yahweh if he was disposed to doubt. He might have reasoned that the slaying of his son would cause him to looked upon as a murderer, as a second king, that it would cause his teaching to be rejected and despised, and thus destroy his power to do good to his fellow men, for he might have pleaded that age should excuse him from his obedience. But the patriarch did not take refuge in any of these excuses. But Abraham was human, his passions and attachments were like ours, but he did not stop to question how the promise could be fulfilled. If the Isaac should be slain, he did not stay the reason with his aching heart. He knew that the Yahweh is just and righteous in all his requirements, and he obeyed the command to the very letter. Abraham believed Yahweh, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called a friend of Yahweh. And Paul says, they which are of the faith, the same are the children of Abraham. That Abraham's faith was made manifest by their works. Was not Abraham, our father, justified by the works when he had offered Isaac, his son, on the altar? Seest thou how the faith wrought with his works? And by the works was faith made perfect. There are many who fail to understand the relation of the faith. Well, if you leave the word blood out, yeah, I can understand why it would be hard for them to understand about the works of the faith or the relation of the faith. If you don't put faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant, yeah, okay. But they are. So that to understand the relation of faith and work, they say, only believe in the Yahshua and you are saved. No, you have to believe in the blood of the Yahshua. That's what makes you saved. You have nothing to do with the keeping of the law, but genuine faith will be manifested in the obedience, said the Yahshua unto the unbelieving Jews. If you were the Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. And concerning the father of the faithful, the Yahweh declared, Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws, says the apostle James. Faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. And John, who dwells so fully on the love, tells us, this is the love of Yahweh, that we keep his commandments. And what does it say in John 15:10? If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I've also kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So that through the type and promise Yahweh preached before the... Let's do it. Through the type and promise the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, preached before the plan of salvation to the blood of the everlasting covenant unto Abraham. And the patriarch's faith is fixed, and the patriarch's faith in the covenant of the blood of the everlasting covenant was fixed upon the Redeemer to come. And Yahshua is the Redeemer. And the patriarch's faith in the blood of the Yahshua was fixed upon the Redeemer to come, said the Yahshua unto the Jews, your father Abraham rejoiced that he should see my day, and he saw it and was glad. For the ram offered in the place of the Isaac represented the son of Yahweh, who was to be sacrificed in our stead. When the man was doomed to death by the transgression of the law of Yahweh, the father, looking upon his son, said unto the sinner, live, I have found a ransom. It was to impress Abraham's mind with the reality of the gospel, as well as to test his faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant, that the Yahweh commanded him to slay his son for the agony which he endured during the dark days of that fearful trial was permitted, that he might understand from his own experience something of the greatness of this, of the sacrifice made by the infinite Yahweh. For the man's redemption, no other test could have caused Abraham such torture of the soul as did the offering of his son. For Yahweh gave his son unto a death of the agony and shame. For the angels who witnessed the humiliation and soul anguish of the son of Yahweh were not permitted to interpose, as in the case of the Isaac. There was no voice to cry. It is enough to save the fallen race, for the King of the glory yielded up his life. What stronger proof can be given of the infinite compassion and love of the other? He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely give us all things? For the sacrifice required of Abraham was not alone for his own good, nor solely for the benefit of the succeeding generations, but it was also for the instruction of the sinner's intelligence, of the heaven and of other worlds, or the field of the controversy between the Yeshua and the Satan, the field on which the plan of the redemption is wrought out is the lesson proof of the universe, because Abraham has shown a lack of faith in Yahweh's promises. Satan had accused him before the angels and before the Yahweh of having failed to comply with the conditions of the covenant and as unworthy of its blessing. For Yahweh desired to prove the loyalty of his servant before all heaven, to demonstrate that nothing less than the perfect obedience can be accepted, and to open more fully before them the plan of the salvation. Heavenly beings were the witnesses of the scene as the faith of the Abraham and the submission of the Isaac were tested, for the trial was far more severe than that which had been brought upon Adam. Compliance with the prohibition laid upon our first parents involved no suffering, but the command unto Abraham demanded the most agonizing sacrifice. All heaven beheld with wonder and admiration for the Abraham's unfaltering obedience. All heaven applauded his fidelity. Satan's accusations were shown to be false. Yahweh declared unto his servant, "Now I know that thou fearest Yahweh." Notwithstanding, Satan's charges seem thus. He said, "Thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me." Yahweh's covenant confirmed unto Abraham by an oath before the intelligences of the other world testified that the obedience will be rewarded. For it had been difficult even for the angels to grasp the mystery of the redemption, to be comprehended that the commander of the heaven, as the son of the Yahweh, the Father, must die for the guilty of man. When the command was given unto Abraham to offer up his son, the interest of all heavenly beings was enlisted. With the intense earnestness, they watched each step in the fulfillment of this command. When to Isaac's question, "Where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham made answer, "Yahweh will provide himself a lamb." And when the father's hand was stayed, as he was about to slay his son, and the ram which Yahweh had provided was offered in the place of Isaac, then Lot was shed upon the mystery of the redemption, and even the angels understood more clearly the wonderful provision that Yahweh had made for the man's salvation.